two plate. There's some Baltimore Torah site also. That's there, of course. Okay. Good morning. Perek Chav Dalad of the Gvuras Hashem. 24th chapter of the Gvuras Hashem. And as we know already, and you're tired of hearing me say, what we're in the middle of is a running commentary, which the Maral is having, on the Parshas HaGeula from Parsha Shmos. This week we get to say in the Maral Shir that we're learning this week's Parsha. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. So the story here is what we're up to. Last week we learned about the Sneh, Moshe Rabbeinu having Hashem appear to him from within the Sneh, within the thorn bush, the burning bush. The Maral doesn't go through every word, Asura Nava'era, and so on and so forth. He doesn't even speak about Madua Leiver Hasneh here. But it says, Hashem saw, Kisor Lirais, Hashem saw that Moshe Rabbeinu had come, you know, gone out of his way to see what was going on. And Hashem called out to him from within the burning bush, and he said, Moshe, 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 and Moshe Rabbeinu responds, and he says, Hineni. Here I am. Here I am. So, the Maral, this is where we're up to. So, the Maral is going to really spend this perek, the first, not the whole perek, but the first part of the perek, dealing with this expression, Moshe, Moshe. And what troubles the Maral, he's dealing with the Midrashim, as he usually does, and the thing is that Chazal are Medayik, that when, for example, you have at the Akedah, Vayomer Avraham, Avraham, so there is a piska, there's a line between the first Avraham and the second Avraham. Right? To properly lane it, I believe you would say, Vayomer Avraham, Avraham, Vayomer Hineini, because there's a line that says that you should somehow delineate between the two. Whereas, and the same thing you find in the Navi, for example, where it's Shmuel, Shmuel. Again, Shmuel, Shmuel. But here, it just says, Moshe, Moshe. Right? Moshe, Moshe, Vayomer Hineini, without any piska. So that's the issue which the Medrash is coming to analyze. What's the purpose of the piska that exists by others, but doesn't exist by Moshe Rabbeinu? And the Maral and the Medrash says a variety of interpretations, which the Maral here is going to develop. The first shot which the Medrash says is fascinating. Says the Medrash, Mashal Adam Shiesh Masalov. We can compare this to a man who's carrying a heavy load. Vayikra b'mhiras pliny pliny. So on, right? Yankel, Yankel. Parek me ole hamasa hazeh. Help, help, help me get rid of this burden. So says the Medrash, the same thing is the case when Klal Yisrael is meshubat, when Klal Yisrael is in bondage, enslaved, here in Mitzrayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe, Moshe, please, quick, get rid of this. Take it off. So, says the Maral, what does this mean? You have to understand, Kol Nevuah Shebo L'Navi L'Fi Mashai Sechreches Haysavua B'Chazoko V'Mehirus. Any prophecy which comes to a Navi as necessary, when it was necessary, to the extent of its necessity, it comes quickly. And this Nevuah, because it was difficult before Hashem, Klal Hashem was suffering with the Shibud, as we learned about last week, so therefore the Nevuah came quickly, because it is something which is Mukrach, and therefore needed quickly and must come quickly. Now this is a fascinating answer. You know why it's a fascinating answer? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls out to Moshe from the Sneh. Between now and Yetzias Mitzrayim is going to be how long? There are different opinions in the Medrash, but a year, you said? Right. A year is probably, right, is one opinion. Right, which is because, first of all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to spend 3 days talking to Moshe Rabbeinu. Then Moshe Rabbeinu is going to go to Mitzrayim. He's going to have all of his stops and starts with Pare, with the Jewish people. They're going to be 10 Makos, each one over a protracted period of time. Exactly how long is the difference of opinion in the Medrash, and it's going to be a while before the Jewish people get out of Mitzrayim. It's going to be even a shorter while, but a while before they're even relieved of the intensity of the Shibud, of the slavery, which happened, let's say, before they actually left. Okay, now, where does it say Avraham, Avraham?
Right before the Akedah.
Not before the Akedah. Before the Akedah, Hashem says Avraham. Uh-huh. It says Avraham, Avraham, when Avraham Avinu is poised over the neck of Yitzchak with a knife. Yitzchak is tied down, and he's saying, Baruch, you know, whatever, you know, he's just ready to cut his throat in. And it's really urgent. It's really urgent. You can't get more time sensitive than that moment. And there it says, Avraham, Avraham.
Relax.
Relatively relaxed. Hafliva fella. How do you tell? You know, it's an amazing thing. Here, it's important, you would say, in the language of the habits of highly effective people, but it's not urgent. And over there, it's urgent. It's also pretty important, but it's not urgent. But you know, like, what's the pshat in this idea that over there? So the language here, you have to understand, is it's different. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't stressed out over the Akedah. Of course, the Malach would have to come and get there in time, but there was not. It was not a situation of stress or distress. The Akedah was something which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it in whatever form, if you want to call it a charade, a false move. Yitzchak was, so to speak, never really in trouble. Nothing happened until the knife goes through Yitzchak's neck, and the knife never went through Yitzchak's neck. The issue here isn't that it has to get there quickly, so therefore let's take out the piska. Let's take out the break and not say, Moshe, Moshe. The issue is the sense of urgency. And what was existing here was that Klal Yisrael was suffering day to day. And that created the sense of urgency. It may be true that it's not going to make it happen any quicker. If the guy in the mushel of the Medrash, right, the guy has a burden and he's, you know, if you don't come here quickly, I'm going to collapse, or this thing is going to fall down and smash to smithereens on the ground. If you have that perspective, that narrow perspective of the metaphor, then of course, in the case of Avram, it should have been said a lot quicker than it said over here in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, where, in a great sense, there really is not such a rush. However, the issue isn't the time. The issue is the sense of distress. Klal Yisrael was in a situation which was paining them, and that makes HaKadosh Baruch Hu call out sharply. Avram and Yitzchak was a scripted event, so to speak. Now, was Yitzchak too very tremendously excited about the situation there with the knife bearing down on him? Well, in a certain sense, you know, Chazal do speak about the fact that Yitzchak wasn't panicking. Yitzchak was welcoming it. You know, he says, you know, help me. And it was a measured, chosen path. It was a measured, chosen path, as opposed to Shibud Mitzrayim, which was just sort of an out of control, so to speak, bondage that Klal Yisrael was experiencing, and in pain, constant pain. The cry in a rush is a cry of pain rather than a calculated way of cutting down moments from, you know, in order to get a quicker response time. That's the way this Medrash has to be seen. So it's yet another expression, Moshe, Moshe, of what was seen in a physical form, in the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears in the sneh, in the thorn bush, in the burning bush. Now we have the non-physical form of the anxiety in Hashem's voice, so to speak. Moshe, Moshe! This is a serious matter. This is a matter which pains me, which concerns me, and therefore I need you to get involved to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. So that's interpretation number one of the Medrash. Interpretation number two of the Medrash is the following. Im kol anavim hifsik miladabar imoem, aval mimayshele hifsik hadibur kol yamav. this second interpretation, as well as the third interpretation that we're going to have in the Medrash, is having to do more with the quality specifically of what's beginning here now for the first time, which is Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu. Unique quality of the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu, which we know is different than all other prophets. So of course, in that light, it makes sense that when Hashem calls out to Avram Avinu or to Shmuel Anavi, who were prophets in their own right, that the call to them would be different than the call to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the specific difference that we have here is hefsek, a break. And the Medrash interprets very simply and elegantly that because Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was uninterrupted, whereas the prophecy of other Nevi'im, it came and it went. Now those who may be learning the Daf Yomi these days, this is very, very relevant to the what we had in the Daf yesterday on Daf Pei Zayin in Maseches Shabbos. I think yes, it was Daf Pei Zayin. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu separated from his wife. We know from the story in Chumash that Moshe Rabbeinu was separated from his wife. Miriam and Aaron complained, why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to separate from his wife? Harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem halegam bonu diber. Is Moshe the only prophet in the world? We're also prophets, and we didn't find it necessary to separate from our spouses for the nevuah which we have. That's the end of Parshas Baha'aloscha. And it is there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks up for Moshe Rabbeinu and says, well, you're not in the same league. The prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu is completely different than your prophecy. Such an important statement, in fact, that it becomes essentially part of the Yud Gimel Ikarei HaEmuna. Right? The 13 principles of faith include a principle that Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy is qualitatively different than that of any other Navi. So what's the deal? So we brought it up in the Gemara in the sense that Moshe Rabbeinu made a Kal V'chaimer. And he said, if Klal Yisrael, that had a one-shot deal of prophecy with a fixed time, a scheduled time, they had to be warned and they had to separate from their wives. That was the Shloisha Siyamim, the 3 days that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them that they should not have intimate relations in anticipation of Amud Har Sinai, because they shouldn't be impure. So if that's the case, so then I, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to me all the time, and without advance warning, I have to be chronically separated from my wife. And in fact, the Pasuk in Parshas Baha'aloscha, as Rashi explains in Parshas Baha'aloscha, was making exactly this point to Miriam and to Aaron. Why? Because the Pasuk says, puts in an extra word, unusual extra word. After Miriam and Aaron expressed their objection, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to appear to them, so the Pasuk says, in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Dalet, 12:4, Vayomer Hashem Pisom El Moshe Vel Aaron Vel Miriam. And Hashem said, suddenly, to Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, go out to the El Moed. So why does it say he said to them, suddenly? Right? This is not somebody being, a melodramatic eighth grade play. You know, this is why. You know, they said something, Hashem responds. What's pisaim? What's the purpose of the description that it was sudden? Explains Rashi. Nigla aleim pisaim veim tmeim b'derech eretz. Aaron and Miriam, they were tamei b'derech eretz. In other words, they were in normal life. They had been with their spouses whenever it was, and they were therefore still carrying the residual tumah that was there. So they're crying, water, water. In other words, quick, we got to get to a mikveh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to speak to us. To tell them, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu demonstrating to them, you see, what Moshe Rabbeinu did right. Moshe Rabbeinu is used to this. I pop in on him all the time. Moshe Rabbeinu has constant interacting with Hashem, not specifically scheduled times. Miriam and Aaron were standard Nevi'im. Standard Nevi'im prepare themselves for a special moment which is disconnected in a certain sense from the rest of their lives. When you prepare for a special moment, so then you can get ready. You can purify yourself so you can have regular life with commercial messages of Nevuah, with interruptions. We interrupt our regular scheduled lifestyle in order to have a Nevuah from Hashem Yisbarach. So you have your life, then you have the bridge from your life to the Nevuah with Hashem, which is purifying yourself, going to the mikveh. You go to the mikveh, you have the interaction with Hashem Yisbarach, and then you get back to regular life. That's what's called Nevuah Sheyesh Lo Hefsek, prophecy which comes in spurts, interrupted. A Nevuah today, a Nevuah the day after tomorrow, a Nevuah in 2 weeks or in 2 years. It comes sporadically. But the nature of Moshe Rabbeinu was that it came all the time. He was always on call to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, he always had to be ready. He always had to be ready. Right? The discussion which you have, which the Gemara has, you know, about Kehanim being careful about not being intoxicated and so on and so forth, because you never know, right? Meheri Yibana Beis HaMikdash. You know, there are all kinds of things. You've got to be ready to go when the call comes. So that's the difference. Now, we have to just go into this a bit deeper, because, excuse me 1 second, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shakol Nivra. It was not simply that Moshe Rabbeinu was always on call, whereas Aaron and Miriam had it scheduled. This is a qualitative difference, of course, in the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu and everybody else. And it expresses itself in the other things which it says in the Psukim about the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and everybody else. And that is that other Nevi'im, it was disconnected from life. In order for them to have Nevuah, they had to be knocked out. They had to be asleep. Or they went into some kind of a fit where they were made to fall asleep quickly and suddenly. That was the nature of it, because in their lives as they lived it, there was normal life. This morning in the Daf Hayomi, on Daf Peches, in Masechet Shabbos, the Gemara says that Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai, when we had Nevuah, we did it only as a result of saying Nasa V'Nishma, which was the mantra the HaKadosh Baruch Hashem said of the angels. Nasa V'Nishma was what the angels said. And HaKadosh Baruch was amazed. And in fact, he gave the Jewish people special radiance, special crowns as a result of their saying this. But then, when the Jewish people retracted and they did the Egel, the golden calf, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away those crowns and he gave them all to Moshe Rabbeinu. And we were discussing briefly when we learned the daf, what is the accepted understanding of this? If I have a life, quote unquote, you know, to use the expression, I have a life, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls upon me on occasion to do things, I need to fit what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calling upon me to do within my life. I do this, I do that, I work, I golf, I you know, do all kinds of things, and I also speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I have to interrupt my regular scheduled life in order to be able to have something with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Can I say, Hashem, whatever you want? It's hard to be able to say whatever you want. No, Hashem, Nasa, I'll do whatever you say. You don't even have to tell me. Whatever you say. Because what happens if it infringes on something on my life which is very important? Am I ready to say whatever, absolutely? To say that is to be angelic. Because a malach has no self. You know what the word malach means? We use it to mean angel, but what it really means, what its core meaning is messenger. A malach is a messenger. A messenger who's not that, you know, his job from 9 to 5 is that he works for some messenger service. His whole being is there as a messenger, which means he has no self he's defined by his mission. Right? This is a well-known thing about malachim, that they're just defined by their mission. That's why their name comes from their mission. They don't even have dual missions, because their whole, you know, if you're a being which has compartments, then you say, okay, I'm me, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that. But if your whole being is defined by your mission, then you can't be defined by two missions at the same time. So a malach has to do one job, and that's it. And when he finishes that job, that same malach perhaps may be ready to do another. But because the malach is all defined by what he's charged to do by somebody else, he says, you tell me, whatever it is. I don't have red lines. I don't have any life of my own. But a human being usually does. And so we have certain boundaries. And when we want to encounter Hashem, that's something that we want to do as well. So it has to fit in. But Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai said, Naseh v'nishma, which was an amazing thing. Which HaKadosh Baruch Hu was amazing. He says, okay, so then you're going to move out of life. You'll separate from your marriages, and you'll have that full encounter with me. And Klal Yisrael did it, but they couldn't maintain it. Because they said, as the Torah records, they said, we're human beings of flesh and blood, and an encounter with Hashem is very hard to work with that. Who would be able to do that? We can't continue to do that. And in fact, they reversed Naseh v'nishma. They reversed it. The Pasuk says, this is a diuk which is noted by the Gaon of Vilna, that he and others, that he said that it says that when they went to Moshe Rabbeinu after Har Sinai, and they said, you know, it was too intense, they said, Kravato ushmo eskol asher yamar Hashem alikenu, you go close, you hear whatever Hashem has to say, and you will then say to us what Hashem said to you, v'shamanu v'osinu, and we will hear it and we will do it, which is the exact reversal of we will do it and we will hear it, which is Naseh v'nishma. They reversed Naseh v'nishma because they said, we can't have this whole thing just take over our existence entirely. We're not malachim. But Moshe Rabbeinu stayed on Har Sinai. And Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore, had nothing else. The Rambam writes about Moshe Rabbeinu and his prophecy and the lifestyle which Moshe Rabbeinu had, that he was on Har Sinai. He didn't eat. He didn't drink. He didn't sleep. He separated from, again, familial life. Says the Rambam, he became like, you guessed it, like a malach. Like a malach Hashem tzivokis. That's the language of the Rambam in Hilchus Yisrael Atayr, I think, Perek Zion. That's what the Rambam writes. He was completely given over to Hashem. And that's why other Nevi'im, when they have an encounter with Hashem, it's through some kind of a tinted glass that's what the language of the Gemara, aspaklar yasheina mir, through a prism which isn't perfectly clear. It had to be like if a person wants to watch a solar eclipse, right? You have to have shades, right? You can't see it, you can't stare at it directly. Moshe Rabbeinu was through aspaklar yamir, like through a clear prism, he was able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because again, there was nothing that separated. Others had to be knocked out of their conscious, active lives in order to have the prophecy with Hashem. And then they came back to regular life. It was a peace. But Moshe Rabbeinu gave himself over completely. So it's not just a scheduling thing. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I always have to be sterile because, I always have to be ready for, because I'm not a surgeon who does, surgery on Monday mornings and on Wednesday mornings and on Friday mornings from 5 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock, where everything's scheduled. I'm on call. I'm the guy who, La'alein Rahman Sam, there's an accident or somebody comes in and needs an emergency catheterization or whatever it is. I'm the guy. So I always have to be ready. Right? I can't party. I always have to be on call. It's not just that. It's not just a matter of timing. It's the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu created, one might say, no hefsek, no barrier, no mechitza between himself and his work with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No red lines, no boundaries. And that's why by Moshe it says, Moshe Moshe. By Avram it says, Avram, Avram. Avram, I'll speak to you sometime, you'll go back to life, I'll speak to you again. That's the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and Shar Nevi'im. So that's what it takes here. This, in other words, whereas the first interpretation, Moshe, Moshe, is not anything to do with the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu, but its urgency because of the content of the prophecy, because it's about redeeming the Jewish people, and Hashem was so commiserating with the Jewish people that he was anxious to see the deed done. According to the second interpretation, and Mirz Hashem as well, we're going to see according to the third, it wasn't about the deed, it was about the type of prophecy which Moshe Rabbeinu had. What made Moshe Rabbeinu unique was Ein Lo Hefsek, that his interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu was constant without interruption. That's this point. Yes?
Wasn't that just from Har Sinai onward? Was it even at the snap?
Was it already at the snap? So, good question, fair question, and it's not pashut that it was there immediately at the snap that Moshe Rabbeinu did it. We see that Moshe Rabbeinu took his wife with him to go to return to Eretz Yisrael, even after the story which happened here at the snap. And Moshe Rabbeinu's poi amaydi madi, the separation from his wife, seemed to occur after HaKadosh Baruch Hu indicated the necessity of doing so to the Jewish people in the 3 days before Matan Torah, and the word, at least where HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed, he said, you stay here with me, was there at that point in time. That is true. But there's an indication here as well. This is the beginning of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy, and it's the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu that's happening at Har Sinai, and so it's something that we have to note.
You see, maybe Moshe sort of arguing with Hashem, Snap. I don't know if you see that later, you know, after any time.
Yeah, you see similar resistance by the Egel. He also, you know, by Parshas Bahalaischa.
Hashem appeared. Did Hashem not appear to the Avos when Hashem wanted to appear? In other words, they always had to prepare because they had a schedule. I mean, how did they know when Hashem was going to come?
I can't tell you exactly how it worked. I can't tell you either with Miriam and Aaron exactly how it worked. But there's a notion which is spoken, which the Rambam writes about and others, of a certain hachana l'nevuah. They had to get themselves ready. I mean, we learned about it in a certain sense even with regard to this prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu, where he was first called to by the Malach before he graduated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to him directly. But by other Nevi'im, yes, to some degree, this is what it is. And they underwent a transformative experience. They were knocked out, and then they do it, or they went into a dream. Now, when did they have time to go to the mikveh before? I don't know exactly how that scheduling thing worked. But evidently that was the case, as you see that in this case Miriam and Aaron were panicking. How can we get there?
Because Hashem never told Moshe that not that you should separate from his wife, why would Moshe assume that whenever Hashem's going to come to me, he'll give me an ample warning, I'll be able to separate from my wife, go to the mikvah, and then have the nevuah? I mean, Hashem didn't appear to him all the time. It wasn't an all day. I mean, I guess he was always, it could happen all day, unlike the other previous Nevi'im. Why wouldn't, because Hashem didn't say it to him, why wouldn't he assume that Hashem will tell him so that he'll have opportunity to prepare?
I think Moshe Rabbeinu understood that his role as Navi Yisrael was to be always there as the conduit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wishes to the Jewish people. You know, the Ramchal
says yesterday that Hashem agreed with that, the fact that he separated, because there's a qualitative difference in the Nevuah.
100%. And that's, you know, as he's saying, but maybe it would be still, time on, time off. The nature as well, you know, like this qualitative difference of Nevuah is such that that's the way it would be. That it would be constant. You know, the Ramchal in the Derech Hashem, when he speaks about Nevuas Moshe, he says an amazing thing, and it's all part of the same thing. When Hashem speaks to Moshe and Aaron, Miriam and Aaron, he says, Loichein avdi Moshe b'chol beisi nemon hu. Moshe is different, in all my house he is trusted. Simple pshat in that is, of all of the members of my household, so to speak, of all of my Nevi'im, of all those who are there to serve me, I trust him the most. Ramchal says, no, that's not what it means. What it means is that he gave Moshe Rabbeinu the master key. B'chol beisi nemon hu means, I trust him anywhere in the house. Whereas usually Nevi'im, they're given something specific. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to tell Yeshaya something about what's going to happen with Sancheriv, so he comes and he tells him that bit of information. But Moshe Rabbeinu had open access to everything. That's all, you know, this is quality, that's part of the constancy of it. Moshe Rabbeinu is not called upon for specific missions. That was the nature of what he was doing. He was completely absorbed, in that sense, in the work of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the work of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's completely, completely taken over by that. So it's, you know, he knows that by definition, that's not sporadic.
Wasn't there a significant period of time in which Moshe did not prophesy whatsoever?
The Chazal say that during the time that Klal Yisrael were menudim lamokaim, that Klal Yisrael was so to speak on the outs because of the gzera. So then ulenis yachid imay hadibur, because what Moshe Rabbeinu did, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't there as a freelance. Moshe Rabbeinu was there only on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Lech reit kishiches amcha. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe Rabbeinu, he gave it to him in the context of Klal Yisrael. And there were a couple of times, including the Ma'aseh Egel, where Hashem suggested, maybe not. Maybe I'll just deal with you as a free agent. And Moshe Rabbeinu insisted, no. If I'm going to be a free agent, I don't want to exist. I only want to be here as part of Klal Yisrael. So therefore, when it was Klal Yisrael wasn't to have the access, then Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have the access. Lech reit kishiches amcha. The Medrash goes on, and the Maral goes on to explain that from a different angle, the same kind of a thing, different angle though, that he says Kol Anavim were not Muchanim leNevuah mitchilas toldaisam. They weren't ready for Nevuah from the get-go, from birth. There was an Avraham who graduated into an Avram of prophecy. There was a break. But Moshe, from the get-go, he was ready for Nevuah. If you recall, several months ago, we learned the Maral's explanation of when it says, when Moshe was born, Vatera Esai Ki Toivhu, they saw that he was good. When Moshe Rabbeinu was born, they already saw his readiness for prophecy. The glow on Moshe Rabbeinu's face, which would grow over time, was already present the moment he came out from his mother's womb. And so the idea was that it was not stages that Moshe Rabbeinu grew into prophecy as much as he was born for it. He was ready for it from the beginning. And again, so that shows him just how that much more attached to the Nevuah. Again, this is the focus of Moshe. Moshe is on the uniqueness of Moshe rather than on the uniqueness of the mission. And Maral just goes on to sort of fill out this thought, and he says that the idea of sort of like a double name is because he says shame, the name speaks to the essence, speaks to the mission. Right? The shame, when you're Kairos Shem, you're trying to speak to what it's about. In the language of Maral, the shame is for the tzura, for the form, rather than for the chaymer, for the matter, for the substance. The matter, the substance, is what's distractive, right? Whereas the shame is what's directive and purposeful. and says, and you know, we've learned in the Maharal many times where he speaks about this thing about Moshe Rabbeinu being the Tzura of Yisrael, because he's giving them the Torah, and the Jewish people being the Tzura of the world, because the Torah is what defines the purpose of everything which is around. And because Moshe Rabbeinu was the tip-top, the paradigm of Tzura, of direction, of purpose. Remember, that's again what we learned at the end last week, reviewing something which we saw several times before. Moshe Rabbeinu ki min hamayim mishisihu, because he was drawn from the water. Water is shapeless. Water has no form, right? Unless you put it in a cup, it assumes the shape of the cup. But otherwise, it has no form. It's water, in that sense, is the ultimate in chaymer, in physical matter, without form. Moshe Rabbeinu was taken out of the water because Moshe Rabbeinu is form personified, the greatest expression and imprint of a form of Tzura, says the Maharal. So therefore, Moshe, right? That's why that name is used, you know, the double name, because of the definition, the purpose that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to stick to in everything which he dealt with in his life. And that's why he says, and this is also sort of a ein lo hefsek, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu did not expire. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was 120 years old, he was still black-haired and sharp-eyed, like krasa einai v'leinos lechai, because Moshe Rabbeinu was tzura, not chaymer, physical material matter ages and withers. But that which is spiritual is chayim, it lives forever. And so, because Moshe Rabbeinu was so much tzura, that's why that was the way he was. And again, this all just feeds in to this same ideas that we've been talking about, how Moshe Rabbeinu was completely given over to his mission, to his purpose, and his physical matter does not distract him nor get in the way. Yeah.
Is there a reason why specifically for the redemption from Mitzrayim they needed somebody who was inherently so close to perfection? And even from the very beginning, you see, like, in David, there's a concept of like being from Yehuda and growing and changing and doing tshuva. And there's the different gulas, even in the Purim story, is not from perfection. And this one, there's a perfection associated with.
It's a great question. I think that the idea here is because what we find in Geulas Mitzrayim and what we find in Matan Torah, which are twin events, which are both accomplished by Moshe Rabbeinu, is Ato Horei Solodas Ki Hashem Hu Elokim Einoid Milvadai. These are, that's where it says that pasuk. These are the places where HaKadosh Baruch Hu was revealed openly, explicitly to the world. It was supposed to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? What's the ultimate in Yetzias Mitzrayim is HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvaydai uva'atzmai. Hashem himself did makas b'chayreis. When the Jewish people were finally rid of Mitzrayim at Kriyas Yamsuf, they saw Hashem beyond what Yecheskel ever saw Hashem. And of course, Matan Torah itself was the most intensive of a direct encounter with Hashem Yisbarach. We didn't see Hashem at creation. We did see Hashem at Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. And it is for that reason that the person who took us out of Mitzrayim and who gave us the Torah had to be completely transparent. He could be providing with no distraction whatsoever. Right? We always remember there are two questions which are asked, which one only really understands the question, or notes which are made, which one only really understands the question when they put the two of them together. And it's unfortunately, for some reason, they're infrequently put together. One question is, or one note is, that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in the Haggadah Shel Pesach. And the other one is that Hashem's name is not mentioned in Megillas Esther. Everybody, when it comes to the Seder, speaks about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu's name isn't in the Haggadah. And everybody, when it comes to Purim, speaks about the fact that Hashem's name isn't mentioned in the Megillah. But those are two sides of one coin. They should be said in the same breath. Masmich Geula LeGeula. Because those were two opposite things. Yetzias Mitzrayim was an opportunity once in history you know, the Yetzias Mitzrayim Matan Torah bridge, right, is one time in history where Klal Yisrael was to see Hashem straight, clear, panim el panim. The Jewish people, according to most Rishonim, shared the uniqueness of Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu for that fling of Matan Torah. And Purim, the whole idea was the opposite. The whole idea was Nes Nistar, hidden miracles that happens through the hand of man. So it's the story of Esther, the story of Mordechai, the story of Achashverosh. The ring is handed over to human beings. Hashem takes the ring off of his finger and he gives it to somebody else. So there Hashem isn't mentioned. But here, because it's all Hashem, so Moshe Rabbeinu's there. But the greatest danger, what leads to the Masa HaEgel? What line leads to the Masa HaEgel? We don't know what happened to Moshe who took us out of Mitzrayim. Bong. You blew it. Moshe took you out of Mitzrayim. Uh-oh. There goes the transparency. Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu goes back and says. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the people who you took out of Mitzrayim, look what happened. Moshe Rabbeinu has to be invisible because it's the hand of Hashem. And as soon as we get confused, we lose it. That's why in the Haggadah we don't even want to mention Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. Now, I just want to say one more thing because the Maharal does not discuss it here in the Gvuras. But I think it's a little bit of a Tyrus Emes, and again, especially in the spirit of the fact that it's this week's Parsha, I would like to share it with you. Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem appeared to him at Har Sinai in the burning bush. The Ness was the Sneh Bler Beish Vasneh Nenu Ukol. We spent a lot of time in the Maral discussing why it was a Sneh. But the Maral did not discuss why the Sneh Enenu Ukol? Why was that the specific maifas, the specific miraculous vision which HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared with? And it seems, I mean, there are hints to this that you can find. I cannot say that I ever saw it explicitly spoken out in this way, but there are hints to it. Moshe is getting charged with his mission at Har HaElokim, at Har Sinai, the place where he was grazing his sheep, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him, where the burning bush appears, is Har Sinai. And it's, I'm not telling you a medrash, right? The pasuk says he came to Har HaElokim Chayreva, and in a few psukim, Hashem is going to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, "B'hitziyachos ha'am Mitzrayim tavduna se'alekim al ha'hor hazeh." When you take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, they're going to serve God on this mountain. This was a first installment, a harbinger of things to come. What does it say about Har Sinai and Har Sinai? When Klal Yisrael got all nervous at Har Sinai, and they said, after having experienced the word of Hashem at Har Sinai, and they wanted to step back, so we quoted the psukim a little bit before, but let's read it here from Parshas Veschanon, Perek Hey, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. V'atayimru, Hei neronu Hashem alei, keinu es kvedoi ves kodloi ves keiloi shamanu mitoich ha'esh. Hashem has shown us His honor and His greatness. We heard His voice from the fire. Hayom hazeh ra'inu, today we saw, ki daber elokim es ha'adam v'chay, that God can speak to man, and man will survive. V'yata lama namus, but why should we die? Ki seichleinu ha'esh ha'gdoila hazeis, that we should be consumed by this great fire. Because if we continue lishma eskel Hashem elokeinu v'amasu, if we continue to hear the voice of Hashem, we will die. Kimi kol basar, because what flesh that can hear the voice of Hashem from the fire like us, vayechi, and survive? What are they saying? They're saying Hashem is a fire. Whatever Hashem's being, it is pure, unadulterated spirituality. To have that meet a physical being, what usually happens is that one consumes the other, like fire consumes wood. What we were demonstrated at Har Sinai was that the fire could meet the wood, that a human being could meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu and survive. V'hasne einenu ukol. It's mamish, the model of what was to come. And even though Klal Yisrael would step back and say, but it won't be able to happen with us again because the sneh will be consumed, but you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you go forth and you won't be consumed. You will go forth as a human being, so to speak, who will attach themselves to Hashem and not be destroyed by it. This is the model which you have over here, and that's what we're talking about. That's the Ein Lo Hefsek. Right? Everybody else, they're human beings, and they have their own life, and therefore when they encounter Hashem, it's a collision course. So they have to carve out little niches where they'll make room for Hashem in their busy, quote-unquote, in their busy lives. With Moshe Rabbeinu, that wasn't the case. There was no contradiction. The two would coexist because he gave over his physicality to be able to absorb the fire. There would be no problem. That was the koyach that Moshe Rabbeinu would have. That was what Matan Torah was going to be for a day for the Jewish people as a whole. And that's why the image is of the fire not consuming that which it would normally consume. I think it's correct. Okay.
So we saw that it was possible.
Yeah.
But Klal Yisrael wasn't wrong to say, you know, we'll be consumed.
No, they weren't wrong. They perhaps weren't as ready to give themselves over as Moshe Rabbeinu was. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says they're right. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was disappointed. Why? Because, do it, guys! Right? Give yourself over completely to Hashem. Hashem said, what they're saying makes sense. Because where they are, they're not ready to do that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes with, to some degree, where you are. He's not, you know, you can't overreach, right? If you want to send Meraglim for Eretz Yisrael, send Meraglim to Eretz Yisrael, right? If you didn't want, I would take you in and you wouldn't have to do anything. But if you want, that's what you feel you have to do. You know, but so it's not wrong, but maybe it betrays a lack of readiness to keep up that Mesiras Nefesh of Nasa V'Nishma. Okay. Yes.
If Moshe was constantly dialed into Hashem, and he therefore separated from his wife, why did he remarry again? Why did he take on that Cushite wife?
Chazal's interpretation is that the Cushi wife was Tzipora, was his original wife. She was a Cushis. She was called Cushis for different reasons, whether it was a euphemism for her beauty, whether because Midian and Cush are somehow related, different explanations which are there. And the complaint was about him separating from Tzipora. Right? The way Rashi writes, if you look over there in Parshas Baal Eischa, is that when there were others were getting prophecy, their Eldad and Medad were prophesying in the camp, so Tzipora was standing near Miriam, and she muttered under her breath, and she said, "They're poor wives." Okay.
Har Sinai was on fire also, right? The mountain?
The presence of Hashem was on Har Sinai. Yeah.
Smoke.
Mountains don't go up in smoke, you know. Mountains don't go up in smoke. The presence of Hashem was on top of the mountain.
But there was smoke going up.
Yes.
So Hashem Kula. It was like the snap. It's on fire.
Okay. But it's more than a snap. It's the people. Okay. So Hashem appears to Avram. Same to Moshe, excuse me. Back in our Pesukim. And we have here again something which really speaks to the same issue of this is the onset of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. Hashem said to him, "Don't come close, take off your shoes, the place which you're stepping is Admas Kodesh. I am the God of your father, of Avram, of Yitzchak, of Yaakov." So again, for some reason, I can't tell you why, there's so many chazal on these psukim, on how Hashem introduced himself, Maral just goes to the end of the pasuk, and it says Moshe Rabbeinu hid his face because he was afraid to gaze at Elohim. He was afraid to gaze at Hashem. Now this pasuk, of course, is huge. Why is it huge? Because when we go back to Parshas Bahalaischa, again, I'm sorry, but this is always going to have to be cited when we're talking about the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu. It is the key source, together with the last verses of the Torah. What does it say about Moshe Rabbeinu? Usmunas Hashem Yabit. He gazes at the image of Hashem. And here it says, Yorei Mehabit El Ha'elokim. He was afraid to gaze at Hashem. How do you put those two things together? So this leads to a discussion which the Maral quotes from the Medrash, but which is also found in the Gemara in Maseches Brachos. And that is, was Moshe Rabbeinu doing a good move here, or was Moshe Rabbeinu not doing a good move here? When Moshe Rabbeinu hid his face because he was afraid to look at Elohim, was Moshe Rabbeinu doing the right thing? Why? Because looking at Hashem is a huge deal. It's so huge that no other Navi was privileged to do it other than Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Jewish people, when they had it again at Mount Har Sinai, it was a big, big thing. Moshe Rabbeinu would be told by Hashem after the Masa Ha'egel, Leisuchali Reises Panai. Right? You can't see my face. We'll very carefully put you in the nook of the rock, and you'll look, you'll see after I pass. So Moshe Rabbeinu should just rush to look at Elohim? Oh, it would be his madrega, it would be his unique quality and opportunity later in his life that he would be the one to gaze at Hashem. But it wasn't something that he just rushed into. It wasn't something that he took for granted. So one opinion in Chazal was that Moshe Rabbeinu did exactly the right thing. That he was hesitant. As the Maral quotes, Rav Yishai Rabba Sever, Sheyafa Asa Sheyistir Panav, I'm reading the second opinion first, Mishum Kvayd HaShechina, Lakach Zocha Leklastir Panav. He says that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu was Zocha ultimately, why Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately merited the radiance of his face, was because here at this point he hid his face. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, in his modesty, would appropriately hide his face, so that the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, right, would then bless him. Because the tzniyus, the modesty of Moshe Rabbeinu, the dignity of Moshe Rabbeinu, right, would be then showing the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu upon his face. Dafka, because he was very conscious and aware of what dealing with Hashem is, and he didn't do it as Chazal say when it comes to after at Matan Torah, when others vayechesu es Elohim vayechlu vayishtu, where it describes them just casually looking at the face of Hashem while they were munching on their popcorn, so to speak. That's the way it makes it sound. They watched Hashem and they ate and they drank. They didn't understand what the difference was. They didn't understand what a leap this was for a human being to have that kind of an encounter with Hashem. So that was why, because Moshe Rabbeinu understood it and appreciated it and was hesitant about it, that's why ultimately he merited it. That's why ultimately he had it the most. The easier you are about it, the less likely you are to have it. That's one opinion. But the other opinion was that Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had revealed himself to him, and Moshe Rabbeinu turned away. Ve'astir Moshe panav, yorei me'abit el ha'elokim. And that's the first opinion which the Maral quotes, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Kivan she'achshav niglei lav HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'hoisa asho azayis miyuchedes li'es niglei lo'i kved Hashem yisborach, since Hashem had appeared to him now. And this was the time when Hashem was meant to appear to him. He should not have turned away, because Hashem is trying to show him what can be seen in a specific time. When you're starting, this is prime time. How did you miss the chance? So Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't have turned away. And says the Medrash, and that's why, at a later time, when Moshe Rabbeinu would say to Hashem, please let me see you, Hareini Noes Kevoidecha, Hashem would say, sorry. Right? The language of the Gemara in Brachos, which discusses this, what daf is that on daf of? Huh? Yeah. The Gemara in Brachos, which discusses this, says, Kshiratzisi loiratzisa. When I wanted, you didn't want. Achshav Sha'ata Raitza, excuse me if I'm not exactly correctly, but now that you want, Ani Raitza, now that you want, I don't want. You weren't interested when I was interested, so I'm not interested when you're interested. Sounds sort of a little petty, right, at first glance. But I think that to some degree we have to understand this a little bit more broadly. And that is that we have to understand it as part of the entire resistance of Moshe Rabbeinu to the mission. Right? Again, Ein Tikkun Sedra, this week's Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu resists terribly Moshe Hashem's charge that he should go and take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. And what's the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu's resistance? So, what I would like to suggest to you is as follows. It's minute 56 of the shiur, so we don't have time to discuss at length. I'm just going to throw it out there to you. When you learn the Parsha this week, look at it a little bit more closely, and perhaps you will see this is correct. Perhaps. And it's part of an ongoing issue that we already alluded to before, earlier today, in Moshe Rabbeinu's life and his relationship to Klal Yisrael and to HaKadosh Baruch. And that is, Moshe Rabbeinu wants to be part of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu wants to be part of the Jewish people. We see that in the fact that when Moshe Rabbeinu, when Hashem says, I'll destroy the Jewish people and recreate a nation from you, twice, at the Egel and Meraglim, Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, I'm going with them, I'm going down with them, right? I have to be part of the Jewish people. That's the posture of Moshe Rabbeinu. You see it in a brief indication in this week's Parsha. Why? Hashem comes to Moshe and he says, Moshe, I want you to go to Parai and tell him to let the Jewish people go. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, hold on, Hashem, what's going to happen? I'm going to go to the Jewish people. I'm going to say, Hashem sent me. They're going to say, who is he? How am I going to... Then they ask me for a sign. Where did Hashem ever say that you're going to go to the Jewish people? He said, you go to Parai. The Netziv has a brilliant formulation somewhere else where he explains that there are two ways you could have a Navi, just like there are two ways you could have a governor over, let's say you have a king and he has an empire, right? And there, then he appoints a governor, right? In Canada there is a position called the Governor General, right, of the Queen of England, right? I don't know what he does or what he doesn't do. I don't know, he may be...
She does.
The Governor General?
Yeah.
It's a woman now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Boy,
you're holding.
it's the Queen.
So. Right. So, what the Governor General, he or she, does, so, you know, they have this position. Now, there are two options. One option is that the Queen can send somebody from England, right? And that somebody from England will have the job to look out for the Queen's interests down there. The other option is that the Canadians can come up with somebody who's part of Canada who interacts with the Queen. You understand? It's two different, what we would call mila elo or mila tata, from above, from outside, or from inside, organic. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to be the latter, not the former. He wanted to be part of Klal Yisrael, who was taking the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. If Hashem says, go to Parai, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes, you know, out from the woodwork, from Midian, and he goes to Parai, then he's Hashem's man in Mitzrayim. If Moshe Rabbeinu goes to the Jewish people and gains the confidence of the Jewish people, then he's the Jewish people's man of Hashem. And it's two completely different fields. So think, for example, about a couple of things which happened in this week's Parsha, which are eyebrow raisers. Forget everything else. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Mitzrayim with his wife and children. Aaron says, what are you doing? We have enough people here already who are in trouble. Why don't you leave them there in Midian? What's Moshe Rabbeinu say? According to Chazal, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I want them to be able to see the miracles. Right? But you understand, if Moshe Rabbeinu is going to want to be part of it, what's the first thing which happens? Right? What happened with Hillary Clinton when she wanted to be the senator from New York? Interloper. What are you doing? Right? There's a Senate seat which is opening up in New York, so you buy a house in New York. Right? You don't live here. Right? You hear this always about these, you know, candidates or these representatives of different districts who really don't live there. Right? They just sort of put something down there. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to be part of the community that he was to save. If they're suffering, I'm suffering. Moshe Rabbeinu brings his child to Mitzrayim and he doesn't give him a bris. Why doesn't he give him a bris? Again, there are different pshatim. But you understand that one of the hallmarks of Mitzrayim was the lack of bris. Cherpas Mitzrayim. Yosef HaTzadik, when he was redeeming the Jewish people, so to speak, through Mitzrayim, he gave the Mitzrayim a bris. But we know, part of Gulas Mitzrayim was the Jewish people had a bris milah and brought the Korban Pesach. B'damai chayi, b'damai chayi. So Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I'm bringing my people, my kid, to be part of it. No bris. Right? He's going to be redeemed. He'll have his bris with everybody else. These kinds of things. Again, you can interpret it differently. Take it or leave it. I'm only putting out to you as an idea. Moshe Rabbeinu wants to be part of the Jewish people for better and for worse, with the challenges as well. And so, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, for Moshe Rabbeinu to immediately embrace the position of Yisrael Elohim, can't do that. Can't do that. Right? Klal Yisrael, maybe they'll have it at Har Sinai, but right now, so Moshe Rabbeinu is going to completely go over to the Hashem side. He wanted to be part of Klal Yisrael, and that's Moshe Rabbeinu's Hastoras Panim. So interestingly, at Mamad Har Sinai, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I want to see your face now." By all accounts, the Zohar asks the questions. By all accounts, Moshe Rabbeinu saw Hashem's face all the time. Tumnas Hashem Yavit. Pel pe adaber, by punim befunim. Right? That's what the characteristic of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy is. But here at this point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you can't see my face, you can only see my back. What's going on? But this was the time when Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm with the Jewish people. I'm with the Jewish people. Don't separate me from the Jewish people. You have to save the Jewish people. This was the whole tefillah was Moshe Rabbeinu's complete identity with Klal Yisrael. And therefore, even though Moshe Rabbeinu said, but I yearn here for your, to be able to see what I saw before this chet, now Kadosh Baruch Hu says, no, if you're with Klal Yisrael, you can't see my face. It's two sides of the same incident. They're both parts of the same incident.
Because the people had gone down?
The Egel was the thud which was heard when the Jewish people crashed to the ground after they said, Moshe, you speak, not us. And that's what Chazal see. It's written in many places that from when the Jewish people said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you speak to Hashem and then communicate with us, from that was born the Egel. Easily, because if they would have spoken to Hashem like Moshe Rabbeinu did, they wouldn't have panicked when Moshe Rabbeinu disappeared. I said, okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu disappeared, but we can still speak to him. Okay, those are some thoughts for this. We will try to finish Perek Chav Dalet next week and hopefully be able to go on.